morning, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of Thursday in the Doghouse. I'm your host, Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer. A few weeks ago, I interviewed Dr. Judy Morgan, a veterinarian from Clayton, New Jersey. We had a really interesting discussion about what foods dogs should not be eating. Dr. Morgan helped to educate us on what ingredients to avoid in all of our dogs' foods and what ingredients you really do want to see listed in their foods as well. If perchance you missed that show, you can hear it in its entirety simply by going to my website, www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Click on the page marked Rini's Radio Show, and you'll see a list of podcasts from previous programs. Click on the podcast for Dr. Morgan's interview. It's a real eye-opener, especially if you're feeding your dogs commercially prepared foods found in supermarkets and retail chain stores. Dr. Morgan is returning to the doghouse this morning to talk more about dog foods, only this time our main focus will be on how diet can directly affect our dog's behavior. Dr. Morgan has been operating the Clayton Veterinary Associates in Clayton, New Jersey since 1993. She's a 1984 graduate of the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine, and more recently, the Qi Institute of Veterinary Traditional Chinese Medicine and Acupuncture. She offers treatments such as chiropractic, acupuncture, massage, trigger point release, aromatherapy, food therapy, homeopathics, and herbal therapies, and combines them with conventional Western medical techniques. I think you're going to enjoy listening to her today. Before we talk to Dr. Morgan, please let me tell you what services I offer as a professional dog trainer in the South Jersey area. Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
Good morning.
I'm so glad you've come back to visit with us. I enjoyed our last interview, and I'm looking forward to talking to you again today about foods our dogs are eating these days and how that affects their day-to-day behavior. I meet a lot of dogs that have allergies to almost everything and anything. Are there certain ingredients in commercial dog foods that actually cause these allergies to develop?
Well, there certainly can be, depending on the individual. Many dogs we have found are allergic to wheat, corn, the dyes in the food, but they can certainly be allergic to any protein source as far as chicken, beef, fish, or any carbohydrate source. So it's really on an individual level.
Really? So a lot of people would not be aware that dogs can be allergic to a very commonly fed food like chicken. That would probably be difficult to determine, wouldn't it? I mean, wouldn't they have to go through lots of testing to figure that out?
Yes. I mean, there are tests that can be done, both blood testing and skin allergy testing, where they do the scratch and injection tests on the skin.
Right.
And certainly you can do elimination diets where you feed a new protein source that they've never been exposed to for a period of 4 to 6 weeks, and then slowly introduce one ingredient at a time to see if they break out or have a problem.
Oh, that's a lot of work.
It is.
Yeah. So if a dog does develop allergies, can that affect his behavior?
It certainly can. You know, dogs who have food allergies can show a multitude of symptoms, including scratching, broken out skin, thickening of the skin, ear infections, vomiting, or diarrhea. Certainly painful ears could cause biting or snapping when people go to pet. Dogs become frustrated, unable to get comfortable, so they pace and, you know, are always looking for some sort of relief. They're rubbing on the furniture or the carpets. Some dogs will become hyperactive because they just cannot find a comfortable position.
Wow. Can we assume anything if a dog has ear infections or things like that? Can we assume that it's an allergy?
Not necessarily. Certainly this time of year with dogs that are swimming, we see infections from getting moisture down in the ear. We can also see infections secondary to bathing where the water is not cleaned out of the ear and it leaves a moist environment down there. But those are normally more of a bacterial infection.
Right.
If we're seeing the common yeasty, brown, smelly discharge, that is more commonly a yeast infection. That is very commonly secondary to a food allergy.
I see, okay.
And those would be seen more year-round.
Okay. In your practice, do you get a sense of what is fed commonly to these dogs that develop this type of allergy?
9 times out of 10, it's a commercial dry dog food, usually not of the best quality.
Right.
But even, you know, on some of the, quote, better quality dry foods, we can still see ear infections and allergic breakouts. Mm-hmm. It's, again, on an individual basis.
What happens if somebody says to you, look, I can't really afford one of these really expensive premium quality dog foods? Do you have any kind of other answer for them? Can they take any supplements that can help the dog?
They can take supplements, but rather than wasting a lot of money on supplements, I'd rather see the money put into a better quality food or home cooking. And home cooking can be a very, very inexpensive alternative mm-hmm. to the commercial processed diet.
Good. I'd like to talk about that in a little bit, about the home cooking. What about protein level? I mean, I'm a dog trainer, and on our email list, we wind up getting into these discussions about protein level being important with dog behavior. How do you decide what level of protein a dog should have in its diet?
I don't go so much on the level of protein as much as I talk about the energetics of each one of the proteins that is being put into the dog. And when I speak of energetics, each food that we eat has an energy level. For instance, things like melons that are a high water content are a very cooling food. Deep water, cold water fish is a very cooling food, so that tends to be more calming. Whereas things like lamb and venison are what we call a warming food. They have a lot of hot energy, and that can make for more hyperactivity and, you know, dogs that are a little bit more off the wall.
Okay. So when people say, you know, because I know they've done studies recently on protein levels to see whether or not it would increase or decrease a dog's aggressiveness. I think they studied dogs that were territorial, dogs that were hyper, and there was another segment to that. I don't think they came out with much information, nothing that they could make a definite statement about the protein level. So,
right, because again, it's not necessarily the protein level as much as it's, you know, the energetics and what else is going into the food that might affect that individual animal.
Is there any place that people could go to find out whether they're feeding a warm food or a cold food? Is there a source for that?
We have that, some of it listed on our website, but there's also a wonderful human book called The Tao of Healthy Eating, T-A-U, by Bob Flaws.
Okay.
F-L-A-W-S. And you can get it on Amazon. That's where I got it. It's a human book, but it talks all about the energies of food and what foods to use to heal certain diseases and disorders, mm-hmm. and we've extrapolated from that, and it's a really good book, and I have a lot of people who use it for themselves as well as their pets.
That sounds wonderful. I think I'd like to go get it myself. What about cholesterol? Is that an important thing to be looking at in our own dogs?
Not really. Dogs do not have hardening of the arteries and cholesterol problems like people do,
mm-hmm.
except for one disease syndrome, and that is dogs who are hypothyroid, dogs who have an underactive thyroid
mm-hmm.
that is not treated for mm-hmm. a long period of time.
Right.
That's the only time that we will see atherosclerosis or plaque in the blood vessels in dogs.
If you saw a dog that had some behavior problems, would you check the dog's thyroid levels and cholesterol levels at the same time?
We like to do a complete blood panel, and that would include both of those on there. And if I see on a screening panel without a thyroid, if I see a high cholesterol, I'm immediately going to then ask for a thyroid level because the two go together.
And as a trainer, I have to say that, you know, the dogs that I have met who were diagnosed with hypothyroidism, that can really have an effect on behavior. Big time. Usually leaning toward aggression. And I have seen some pretty powerful changes once the dog is put on medication where the behavior really gets a lot better if it's caught early.
Yes.
If it's caught early, that's the thing. And what about carbohydrates? Are there good carbs and bad carbs in a dry kibble diet?
Well, I certainly feel that there are, and I'm not a fan of carbohydrates for dogs in general, although there are a few good carbs. I certainly like to avoid wheat, corn, and soy.
Okay.
Because they have glutens in them, and many dogs are allergic to those.
Soy also? I mean, I thought soy was a healthy product. It's always being touted as being very healthy for us.
Yeah, it's an inexpensive way to raise the protein levels in diets.
I see.
Now, certainly we can use tofu occasionally to cool dogs who are way too warm, dogs who are just panting all the time and drinking a lot, trying to cool themselves off, and tofu can be a good cooling food.
Wonderful. Okay.
But you're not going to find tofu in dry dog food.
No.
But the good carbs, and they're more expensive, so they're not in as many foods, would be quinoa, which is spelled Q-U-I-N-O-A. It looks like quinoa. It's pronounced quinoa.
Okay.
Is a very, very good carb. Barley and sweet potatoes.
Sweet potatoes, that's an ingredient that we can get easily. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, somebody recommended that when we, do you know what a Kong toy is? It's a red cone that we stuff food in. It's a food reducer.
Oh, yeah, Kong, sure.
And somebody said that, I was at a seminar, and just another trainer said that she recommends that people give their dogs mashed sweet potatoes to fill those Kongs with, and it becomes a really wonderful and tasty treat.
They're great for them, and we certainly use a lot of dried sweet potatoes as treats.
Dried sweet potatoes, just cut up raw?
They're actually available in many of the pet stores now. They're sold.
The
dehydrated sweet potatoes.
Wonderful. Good. So what about the bad carbs? What effect can that have on behavior? Are you aware of any specific behaviors that you get from that?
Well, certainly if you have, then you're going to have a lot of the behaviors that we talked about before. Also, you know, with the bad carbs, with the bowel problems that can commonly be caused, we end up with diarrhea, we end up with soiling in the house, we end up with dogs with, you know, mushy stools, voluminous stools, and things that people are not real happy about, especially
right,
when the accidents are in the house.
Right, sure. Well, the thing that I like to tell people is that if you're feeding a good quality diet, then there will be less stool because
absolutely,
there's less waste product that the dog has to get rid of.
Right.
So that works really well. It's just convincing people to that they do have to spend a little bit more money. But here again, if you spend more money on a better dog food, you're spending less money on veterinary bills.
Absolutely.
So, you know. What about the senior dogs? What can you tell us about their specific diet, what things that they should be getting? And then once you do tell us that, I have another question about that.
Okay. Senior dogs tend to, you know, be starting to decline a little bit. The kidneys don't work as well. The digestive system doesn't work as well. Their brain power is not as good. They're starting to show usually some cognitive dysfunction. Translate that to senility.
Right.
So there are certainly things that can be added to their diet that can help with their arthritis and their senior moments. Omega-3 fatty acids are probably the most important, and when we talk about omega-3s, we're talking about EPA and DHA as the important components of that.
Okay.
And they'll be listed on the label when you look at a bottle of fish oil.
Mm-hmm.
And we feed them in very high quantities to combat inflammation and arthritis and also to help with the mental power. Zinc becomes a higher requirement in particularly the older males for prostate health and can also be very important for coat health.
Mm-hmm.
Chromium is something that you probably won't see listed on a bag, but it's a micro mineral, and that is very important for diabetic control.
I see.
Usually when you buy a bag of food that is made for a senior animal, it's going to be higher in some of those trace vitamins and minerals that the seniors do need. And usually the commercial diets are higher in fiber for senior dogs.
I was going to ask you about that. How do we know that the dog is getting enough fiber just by looking at the label?
You don't. And basically, you don't go by the label to know if your dog's getting enough fiber. You go by the stool consistency. Now, I feed my dogs a totally raw diet, mm-hmm. which basically has no added fiber. There's no fiber in there, and their stools are just as hard as can be and mm-hmm. very solid and very small.
Right.
You're not looking for this huge volume of stool. The less stool, the better.
Mm-hmm.
And older dogs who are starting to dehydrate a little bit and their kidneys don't work as well, if you add too much fiber to their diet, you will actually constipate them and dehydrate them even more.
Wow, really? Okay. And the cognition subject, like, so omega-3s, you feel that feeding them, you said high levels, and so would that be high levels for no matter what size dog and what kind of levels would that be?
If I have, for instance, an 80-pound dog, I'm going to be looking for 2,400 milligrams of omega-3s, which is only the DHA and EPA component of that.
Okay, all right.
Do the math to divide that down, but mm-hmm. you know, across the board, it has been proven there are a lot of prescription diets on the market for senior dogs, and they just have tons of omega-3s added to them.
And you are in favor of those prescription diets?
No, I am not.
Oh, okay.
But they have done the research to prove that the omega-3s help with the cognitive dysfunction. I do not use prescription diets.
Can you give us a little explanation of why?
I do not use them because they're very high in corn, and they are made with meat byproducts, a lot of ingredients that are not high-quality ingredients. You know, corn is a great energy source, but dogs are not supposed to eat high levels of corn.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like anything with byproducts,
right.
And we discussed that a little more last time.
Yes, we did.
So I'm looking for high-quality proteins. I'm looking for good meat sources. And if we're going to have any carbs at all, then I want the good carbs that we talked about, the mm-hmm. barley, the sweet potatoes, the quinoa.
Okay.
And I want high levels of omega-3s for my older dogs. So I'm pretty much supplementing the older dogs with the good omega-3s, no matter what they're eating. I think that they need the extra levels of the vitamin 3s, unless they're on a really high fish diet.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, as far as behavior is concerned, I want to just step back a minute. We talked about, you know, naturally the importance of fiber and constipation. And can you imagine how cranky a dog must feel if he's constipated? And what happens when a dog gets cranky? They get irritable and they get snappy and bitey, and that's what we get. You know, everybody thinks, oh my God, the dog is aggressive. Well, he's probably not. He's just feeling miserable.
Yeah, so we see that as a much bigger problem in old cats. Old cats get very dehydrated on dry foods, and then people give them more fiber for their constipation, which just makes the situation worse. What they need is moisture.
Right. Okay. The cognition, the omega-3s help with the dog's ability to think more clearly and not to get confused, things like that?
Correct. And we also promote things like, you know, spending time playing with your dog and giving them things to think about. There's some wonderful toys out that are made by Nina Ottenson,
right.
Where you hide treats in them. There's a spinner and a tornado and, mm-hmm. and little things, puzzles that they
right.
have to work out.
Mm-hmm.
And giving your senior dog things like that, playing hide-and-go-seek with his treats, things to make them think and entertain them and work their brain just like with older people,
mm-hmm.
is very, very important for those senior citizens.
Absolutely. And one of the toys that I recommend for dogs that need more mental stimulation are the Kong toys that are very easily obtainable in any pet supply store. And we just, you know, you can put the dog's kibble in there and let them roll the Kong around to get their kibble, or you could stuff it and let them try to hunt it out, you know, do a little hunting by trying to get that food out of there. And I always recommend freezing them too. It just gives the dog something to think about and keeps him alert as to how to problem solve. And they love it. They absolutely,
absolutely.
Love it. All right, so you are in favor of a raw diet, and I know and have heard of many people putting their dogs on a raw diet, even the elderly dog, to help with cognition and allergies and also behavior. What is it that you like so much about a raw diet?
I think it's a much more natural diet that is closer to what the, you know, original diet is for dogs, you know, that it was when they were out in the wild and, you know, hunting. And it just makes for such better health. We don't have the problems of the vitamin and mineral deficiencies. We don't have the problems, or at least I have not had the problems, with contamination. The product that I use is actually a pasteurized, cold pasteurized product, so it's still raw. But we don't have problems with contamination. We don't have problems with diarrhea. We don't have problems with ear infections. The animals are just overall much, much healthier. And that's really been shown across the board by holistic veterinarians who promote either home cooking or raw diets.
Right. And I'm sure that you get a lot of people who contact you who tell you that their own vets will, you know, do not approve of that. They don't know anything about it, or they just think
it's really... Most of them pull out the, it's all contaminated, your dog will develop salmonella, E. coli, you know, you'll get horrible bacteria. Most of them pull out that card. And we just don't see it.
But you mentioned last time, which I found very interesting, and it sort of made me more aware, that if you're buying, let's say, any raw food from the supermarket to give to your dogs, they can be contaminated a little bit with more bacteria because of the sitting around and being handled and being processed and taking so long for the dog to actually get it on its plate, per se.
Exactly. The more a food is processed and the more people that handle it, the more levels of contamination you have. You know, whereas using the frozen products, a lot of the bacteria that could have been there are killed in the freezing process. And again, you know, the companies that pasteurize are going to have a higher level of purity. And those products are monitored very, very closely. Whereas, you know, when you go buy chicken in the grocery store, 60% of that will grow nasty bacteria if you culture it.
Right. Would that make the dogs sick? Wouldn't improve the dog's condition?
Well, the interesting thing is that dogs have a really good ability in their digestive system to kill off that bacteria. I mean, how many times do you see dogs out, you know, they're running in the field, they find a dead carcass, and they're sitting there snarfing down the meat as fast as they can. That's about as contaminated as it can be. And half the time they don't get sick from it. And it's because their digestive system handles that much, much better than ours. So one of the things I don't like to see is, you know, a person getting the raw chicken from the grocery store, cutting it up on their kitchen counter, throwing it in the dog bowl, the dog eats it, then they don't wash and disinfect their counter, they don't disinfect their bowls, and you are going to start growing some bacteria in your kitchen.
Can dogs come up with salmonella and E. coli?
Yes, they certainly can, but we don't see it often at all. They just seem to handle it better. So, but they certainly can develop that. I just read a study this weekend where the dogs were actually dogs that are used as therapy dogs in nursing homes and hospitals. The dogs will culture positive for the nasty bacteria that they're actually getting from the people.
That's that MRSA, isn't that MRSA infection?
Well, MRSA and Clostridium difficile, which is very, very common in older people that are immune compromised in nursing homes and in hospitals. They shed it very commonly in their stool, and that's one of the big things that the hospitals have to combat all the time. And it's not something that's normally found or commonly found in the dogs. But these dogs, and they actually studied it, and the dogs that were more likely to lick the people or take treats handed them to them from the people where the dogs would then culture positive for the Clostridium. And it didn't make the dog sick, but they were shedding it in their stool after the visit where they weren't shedding it in their stool prior to the visit. So, you know, we're actually giving things to the dogs.
Would that make the dog a carrier then?
That's up for debate.
All right. So at least people need to be aware of this anyway, especially
those that are. Yes, you can get things from your dog, but your dog can get things from you. But the dogs handle it. You know, it'd be rare for the dog to develop a diarrhea from it. It will just be able to culture it out and identify it.
All right. Let's talk about the cooked diet. Do you also like that, correct? Okay, and so what do you recommend when you are advising somebody to do a home-cooked diet for their dogs? Is it less expensive than the raw diet?
Yes. It can, especially if you're buying a commercial raw diet that is a frozen product, they can get a little bit pricey, particularly if you have multiple dogs, whereas you can cook up a batch of stew in your crock pot or on your stove very inexpensively, because you can go buy, you know, you can go to Sam's or Costco or one of the big stores and buy huge batches of, you know, chicken breasts or, you know, chicken thighs. beef, whatever it is that you're going to use as your meat base.
Mm-hmm.
So you can buy it rather inexpensively.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly if you know someone who butchers a cow and you can get it less expensively, or if you hunt and have deer meat, hunt rabbit, whatever, you know, there are certainly less expensive ways and you can buy in bulk if mm-hmm. you have enough freezer space.
Okay.
You know, we actually have a basic home-cooked recipe, which I believe is on our website. If not, you can call our office for
okay.
it. The big thing with home-cooked, we do have a little bit of carbohydrate. We either use sweet potatoes or barley or quinoa as, a little bit of a bulk filler in the diet, particularly if we have a large dog.
Mm-hmm.
And we use vegetables, either fresh or frozen vegetables, depending on the season. And we use fruits in our diet. But you do need to supplement the calcium if you're going to do a home-cooked diet, because when you cook it, you're going to lose all that calcium, and especially if you're feeding a high meat diet, your phosphorus ratio will be too high.
Okay.
And there is a supplement called K9 Minerals, which is made specifically for home-cooked diet additive to balance out that calcium. When you feed raw foods, the raw meats, you're going to feed raw bones in with it. The frozen products have the bone ground in with them. If you're going to the butcher or to a source to get your own raw meat, then you also want to grind the bone with that so that they'll get enough calcium.
Okay.
Or you can add a supplement.
Okay. The foods that you're talking about, both the raw and the home cooked, can they be given to puppies, or do puppies, should they stick with the commercially prepared puppy foods?
We have a lot of puppies who have been raised on the raw food.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little more hesitant to do a home cooked with puppies. Because I want to make sure that they're getting a good enough base as far as the protein levels and the vitamin and mineral levels.
Okay.
So if someone wants to start their puppy out on something other than a commercial canned or dry food, then my recommendation is to go ahead and start them on the raw food.
Okay.
I don't recommend home cooked near as much, although I do have clients who have done it and their puppies have done great.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to be more careful with that.
I see. Okay. Going back to behavior, what about a dog that's on a really good quality diet who had digestive issues and is doing much, much better, but now has developed dandruff and is scratching himself like crazy? Are there many things that cause dandruff, or is this...
Sure. I mean, he could have environmental allergens, inhaled allergens in dogs, where we get the runny eyes and nose, they will start scratching and breaking out.
Mm-hmm.
He could be on a diet that is too warming or too drying for him.
All right.
So we might need to add things to combat that, and certainly look for things like external parasites, fleas or ticks that could be causing the scratching and then the dandruff and the dry coat. Anytime I see dandruff, I'm going to start thinking that they've got some sort of a blood deficiency, which means we need to add things to their food that are blood tonics, things like sardines or beef or liver or heart, which are going to be very good, or the omega-3s
mm-hmm.
to help with that.
Okay. All right. This has been wonderful. We only have about 2 minutes left. The other services or treatments that you offer at your vet hospital, what's listed is food therapy. So is this what we have been talking about, just adjusting the foods and putting the dogs on a good food? So
yes, and we do it by individual. So there's no one diet that fits every pet.
Of course not, right.
So,
right.
We evaluate each pet individually and decide what would be their best base. Even if you're going to go with a commercial food, we're going to help you decide whether it should be beef-based, fish-based, lamb-based, chicken-based, and what things that you need to avoid for that particular pet.
Okay. And what are things that you put into the category of herbal therapies, and what would they be for?
We have American herbals and Chinese herbs, and they can be used for anything, and herbals can be used in place of traditional medications. And they can commonly be used to treat things like hypothyroidism and diabetes. You don't always have to go to traditional medications for those
mm-hmm.
things.
And does it take longer when you use holistic herbal
yeah,
therapy?
You're not going to get that immediate effect. You know, people come in and they say, oh, I just want the steroid shot for his itching or the steroid shot for his allergies or his arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
And, the steroid shot, yeah, they'll feel better the next day. But in the long run, it's going to be worse for their health.
Mm-hmm.
If we start on the holistic path, it might take a little bit longer. It might cost a little bit more. And we might have to play with their herbals a little bit because, again, it's not one size fits all. And there are thousands to choose from and thousands of combinations to choose from.
Really? Well, listen, would you be willing to come back and talk about these other therapies that you offer and explain what they are?
Sure.
I would love to have you come back.
Okay.
Before we hang up, tell people where they can contact you, both online and by phone.
Okay. We are Clayton Veterinary Associates. We are at 820 North Delcy Drive in Clayton. Clayton is just south of Glassboro. We're near Rowan University. Our phone number is 856-881-7470. Our website is Clayton, C-L-A-Y-T-O-N, Vet, V-E-T, N-J, as in New Jersey, .com. It's under construction, so a lot of our information is there, but more will be coming very shortly.
Okay.
And we welcome emails. You can get to us through the website with the email, and we'll be happy to answer as many questions as possible.
Thank you very, very much. I'm very grateful that you did this for us these couple of times, and I'm looking forward to talking with you again.
Thank you very much.
Have a great day.
All right.
Bye. Bye. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in to Thursday in the Doghouse. I hope you tune in again next week from 10 to 10:30, and I promise you we'll have another interesting discussion with another expert. Have a great week, everybody.